Sefer Shmos is known as Sefer HaGeula. And we can understand why the first four parshios of Shmos are in Shmos, because they obviously have to do with the redemption, with Exodus. That's until the splitting of the Red Sea. At that point, we were redeemed. Shiro Chadosha Shibchu Geulim. Why the rest of the parshios in Sefer Shmos? So Yisro we can get by with easily, because the physical redemption was not complete until the spiritual redemption took place, which was the giving of the Torah. Ein lecha ben chorin, ala mishol sipat Torah. Real freedom is only total immersion in the Torah. And therefore, until Maimed Har Sinai, the redemption wasn't complete. That's why Pesach is not completed till Shavuos, and we count the days between to connect the two holidays. But how about the rest of Sefer Shmos? Mishpatim deals basically with civil law, which could have easily been in Vayikra or Devarim. There are similar parshios, Kedoshim, Kiseitse, in those Svarim that deal with these kinds of laws. And Truma, Tetzave, Kisisa, Vayakil, and Pekude deal predominantly with the building of the Mishkan. And the building of the Mishkan seems to have its place more in the next book, which is Toras Kohanim Vayikra. Toras Kohanim are all the laws that deal with the Korbanos, the Kohanim. So before you can have Korbanos, you need a Mishkan. So the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, Toras Kohanim, should have been the erection of the Mishkan. Why is it in the book of Geula, in the book of redemption? So the Ramban answers the second question. And he says that redemption is when the Jewish people would reach the full potential they once had, which was lost to them. Regaining that potential is called redemption. Redeeming your total potential. What potential do we have as a people? Started with the nucleus of the Avos. The Avos had God's presence on their tents constantly and consistently. God's presence dwelt amongst them. That was the level of the Avos. Until the Jewish people returned to that level, they weren't fully redeemed. Therefore, it was only after the construction of the Mishkan and God's presence devolving on the Mishkan, and through that devolving throughout the Jewish people in the heart of every Jew on a constant basis, they weren't fully redeemed. Therefore, you need the parashios Truma, Tetzave, Kisisa, Vayakel, Pekude, which deal with the erection of the Mishkan, to make the Geula, to make the redemption complete. That still doesn't answer what Mishpatim is doing in Sefer Shmos. Why Mishpatim? So I have a few different answers. I'm going to give you one today. And secondly, if we're dealing already with Mishpatim, with civil law, why is the Mishpat of the Eved Ivri, the Jewish slave, the first Mishpat that Torah deals with? The Medrash says the following: Chayiv kol adam lomar bishvili nivra ha'olam. Every person has to say, the world was created for me. The lo yomar, and he shouldn't say, ein olam haba ve'ein tchias ha'mesim. And he shouldn't say, there is no world to come, there's no resurrection of the dead. Now, first of all, for a person to walk around saying, the world was created for me, sounds a little haughty. Secondly, what in the world is there a connection between, if the world was created for me, whether there's a world to come or a resurrection of the dead or not? What difference does it make? Right? And if the world wasn't created for me, then there is no resurrection of the dead, there is no world to come. What's the connection? The Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari HaAvoda, he wrote a sefer, Shari Tshuva, he wrote a sefer called Shari HaAvoda. And he says like this: HaPesach HaRishon, the first entrance into service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sheyedo HaIsh HaOved Erech Atzmo, that the one who wants to serve God should know his own self-worth. V'yakir Ma'aloso Ma'alas Avosav, he should appreciate and recognize his greatness and the greatness of his fathers. V'gidulosam, v'chashivusam, v'chibosam etzel abor yisborach. And how precious they were, and he is, to God. V'yishtadol v'yishchazik tomid lahamid atzmo maylahi. And he should constantly strive to maintain that tremendous maila, that tremendous greatness that he inherited from his forefathers, and that he is, that he has. Uvishnai batamin, to act accordingly. Bechol yom v'yom yosif omets, liknos malos umidos, ashi yiskori behem labor v'yadabek yelav. And that should give him the incentive to every day consistently add and acquire more levels and more good traits, which will bring him closer to God. If in the beginning it's difficult, in the end he'll be very successful. And he'll do what is proper, so he won't be embarrassed in the eyes of his forefathers, that if they would see what their progeny is like, that he'd be terribly embarrassed of them being embarrassed of him. The Yetzilo Mizek, Kikashi Yisava Taiva V'Yalabil Vavo Gaiva Lasos Dover Sheinu Hagud. And another benefit will be that when he'll have the intention or the desire to do something wrong that's not befitting him, Yevosh Mi'atzmo V'Yavosh Mi'Avosa, he'll be embarrassed to do it, because he'll realize this is not befitting me, nor is it befitting my family status. The Yoshiv Anafshav Yomer, Adam Godel V'Choshim Kamoni Hayom Sheyesh Bikama Milas Tovos Ramos V'Nisos. Person as great as I am, who has so many good points to him, V'Shani Ben Gedolim Ben Malchi Kedem, and I am the descendant of great important people. Eich Es Haro Gedol Azos. How could I do such a terrible thing? But if he doesn't recognize his greatness, he thinks he's a nobody, he's a nothing, he's good for nothing, he doesn't recognize the stock he comes from, then there's no incentive for him not to do things that are unbefitting, because they become befitting him. Alkein ha'oved, alkein ha'ish ha'oved, yishtadol tamid lahasig erko ve'erech ha'tzadikim v'chasidim u'malosom v'chashivosom v'chibosom v'Hashem yisbarach u'dveikusom. Therefore, a person who wants to serve God should put his mind to his intrinsic self-worth, his milas, right, how much potential he has, what his good points are, and where he comes from. And that will give him the incentive to serve the Rabbanu Shel Olam and to not do things that are improper. Bottom line, what the Shari Tshuva is saying, that a person recognizing his own self-worth, self-respect, is an extremely important foundation of Avodas Hashem. For two reasons. One is, if you think you're a nobody, then why would the Rabbanu Shel Olam want a nobody serving him? And secondly, if you think you're a nobody, why would you have the incentive not to do not good things, because good-for-nothing people do not good things? That's what's befitting them. But if you understand that you're fit for much better, you have an intrinsic value and worth, and you recognize your own self-respect and self-value, then you'll have an incentive and a deterrent from doing things that don't befit you. In fact, that's how we end off the vidui. Ashamnu, bogadnu, ovarnu amitzvosecho, mishpotecho atovim, v'lo shovalon. We say we have transgressed your good commandments, v'lo shovalon. I think the simple translation of v'lo shovalon is, we didn't benefit from it. It wasn't worth it. We thought we'd gain all these benefits from doing wrong things, and in the end, final bottom line, it wasn't worth it. The Telzer Rosh Hashiva of Elimeir Bloch says a different meaning. V'lo shava lanu can be translated, and it was not befitting me. In Yiddish we say, lo tsugipaz, nish tsugipaz from here. It wasn't befitting me. That's not me. I did all these terrible things, but that's out of my character. It's a quirk. It's not what I really am. Because if you believe that's what you really are, then why should you feel bad about doing it? If that's what you are, that's what you do. But if it's out of character, then there's something to feel embarrassed about. There's something to be to confess and to feel guilty about. In fact, that was one of the purposes of Maamid Har Sinai, where God appeared to us, spoke to us on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu, the first two Dibros. He raised us to the highest level of prophecy, spoke to us individually, which he never did to any other nation, as a nation. And the Torah says, why? Leman yeh yiras Hashem al paneichem levilti secheto. First the pasuk starts, Leman nasos eschem. Some Rishonim learn nasos means to raise you up on a banner, to pick you up. Lenasos eschem. Uleman yeh yiras Hashem al paneichem levilti techeto. You should have the capability of shame, that you shouldn't sin. What does that mean? I raised you up. I showed you how much I consider you important. I spoke to you face to face, an entire nation. I consider that you have tremendous potential. Otherwise, why would I have chosen you and taken you out of Egypt and given you my Torah more than any other nation? So I raised you up. I showed you what potential, how precious you are to me, how much I put stock into you, how much I consider you great people. And I did it because of your ancestors too, how great they were, how much I promised them, how much I made a bris with them. And therefore, what's the result of that? That you'll be able to have shame. If you want to do something improper, unbefitting, you'll be ashamed of it, because you realize how much God considers you important, and how what stock you come from. How could you do something that's so uncharacteristic, unbefitting somebody of such great stature? That's the purpose of Maamid Har Sinai. That was how the Torah was given. And that's why, right before the Torah was given, I don't remember if we mentioned this back then, but I mention it now. Right before the Torah was given, Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to go down and warn the people again that if anybody approaches Har Sinai and is liable to a death penalty, to me it'll be considered like a multitude of people have lost their lives. So one Jew is important like a multitude to me, even a sinner, because that's what the person is going to approach Har Sinai. He's doing something wrong. But if that person loses his life, God said, it's considered to me like a multitude. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Rabban Hashem, there's no need to warn these people again. I warned them once. We made a border around the mountain. Nobody's coming up to Har Sinai. Why the bother to go and warn them a second time? And the Rabban Hashem does not accept Moshe Rabbeinu's complaint, and he sends him down. Go down and tell them. And we've explained in the past why. Because the more important a human being is, the more important a Jew is, the more important the Torah is. Because if I'm not worth anything, then the Torah, which in one respect is the owner's manual to human life, it's God's manual, guide to how to use our lives properly. If life is important, then the guide is important. But if life's not important, then the guide's not important. Right? When you buy a car, you get a nice, thick owner's manual that tells you in great detail how to use this car properly. When you buy a pack of gum, it doesn't even come with one page of instructions how to chew the gum properly. You know why? Because chewing the gum isn't important enough to tell you how to do it right, because if you do it wrong, buy another pack of gum. But if you don't use the car properly, the results are devastating. So it's worth telling you how to do it. It's important that you put the right gas in the gas tank and the right oil in the crankcase and so on. If human life, if Jewish life is not important, then the Torah can't be more important than the life that it guides. if I'm not important, then what difference would it make to anybody what I eat and what I think and what I look at and how I dress? Who cares? But if what I do is universally important, eternally important, it has universal and eternal implications, then how I do it is very important, that I do it the right way. So the Torah gains importance if human life and Jewish life become important. If it's not important, then the Torah loses its importance. So right before the Torah was given, God wanted us to appreciate the value of the Torah that we're accepting. So he wanted us to know how important our lives were to him, that if one person, a sinner, approaches Har Sinai and forfeits his life, to me it's considered like a multitude. Therefore, everyone has to recognize that. And a person has to walk around constantly saying, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. What does that mean? The world, all the worlds, the physical world, the spiritual world, was created for the sake of man. No other purpose for it. It's created for the sake of man. Everything created, man can somehow use to create his Olam Haba. That's what God created the world for. No other purpose. And if that's the case, then everything I do is significant, and everything is for an eternal purpose. Because if the whole world, every single thing was created to serve man, it doesn't stand to reason it was only done for 120 years. There's probably some kind of eternal, universal purpose for it. Otherwise, why create all of this for 120 years for one person? And every human being is one person. And the world was created for that one person. So therefore, what I do must have eternal implications. It must have universal implications, because everything was created for me. And therefore, there must be an Olam Haba. There must be a Tchias HaMesim. It doesn't stand to reason that it's for 120 years. But if I'm unimportant, the whole world wasn't created for me, I'm a very unimportant speck in this whole thing, then if I'm no more important than an ant, the ant's not important the first time around, you don't bring them down for an encore. You don't have Tchias HaMesim and Olam Haba. So then why should there be Tchias HaMesim and Olam Haba for me? That's the connection. And that's not gaiva. That's not haughtiness. Haughtiness is, I'm important because I made myself important, and that gives me rights. And recognizing your self-worth, self-respect, is I'm important because God made me important, and that gives me responsibility. That's the difference between it. Same feeling. The question is, are you a self-made person? Or are you important because God made you important? Does your importance give you rights? Does your importance give you responsibility? The only difference. And therefore, immediately after the Torah was given, the Rabban Hashem wanted us to know how important we are, how important human beings are. And therefore, he gave us the Mishpatim. Mishpatim are based on two principles. Mishpatim is civil law, interpersonal relationships, how people get along, how you can create a functioning society. Mishpatim have their source, the Rambam says, basically, in V'ohavta Re'acha Kamocha. That's the umbrella of all chesed, all mishpat, all justice, kindness, is do to somebody else what you want them to do to you. Function with somebody else as you would want them to function with you. Don't do to somebody else what you don't want them to do to you. That's the overall umbrella of justice. Function in a just way with other people. Don't murder and don't steal and all the ideas of social justice, interpersonal relationships. That's Mishpatim. There's another basis, though, for Mishpatim. And that is the idea that we were created, B'Tselem Elokim, and therefore we have to function in a way that befits a human being. You have to function in a just way. Human beings don't kill. Human beings don't murder. Human beings don't steal. It's not the quality of a human being. In fact, it starts in Vayikra. Vayikra, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban. And Adam, so Rashi brings down there a medrash. Why is it Adam? Why didn't say Ish ki akriv korban? Adam tells me, just like Adam Arishon did not bring from stolen property because there's nothing to steal, so too you're not allowed to bring stolen animals. That's just korban. The obvious question is, why such a roundabout thing? Tell me, the korban has to be yours. Can't be stolen. The Torah speaks about a lot of things. You're not allowed to use stolen property. And it mentions it, that it has to be yours. Not something that's stolen, like a lulav. Shalochem. Lekachtem lochem. Lochem v'lo ha-gozel. Right? So why here is the Torah used such a roundabout way? Adam. One idea, I think the two ideas really go together. One idea, I think, is the following. Many people think that stealing is wrong because it affects other people wrongly. And therefore, all morals, all justice, is because of how it affects other people. But if it wouldn't affect other people wrongly, then there's no reason why you couldn't do it. And therefore, that leads to a philosophy of consenting adults. I only have to act morally if it steps on somebody else's toes. But if it doesn't affect anybody else adversely, then I can act like an animal if I want in the privacy of my own home or in the privacy of my own bedroom. Comes along the Torah and says, no. Adam ki akriv mikem korban. Adam Arishon didn't bring anything stolen. If there could have been something considered stolen, but it affected nobody else because there was nobody around, it still would have been wrong. Stealing is wrong not because it affects somebody else adversely, because a human being, a Jew, an Adam, doesn't steal. That is not the makeup of what a human being is. Somebody who steals loses his Tzelem Elokim. He's not the Adam who's created in God's image. God hates, abhors stealing. So that's what it's telling me. Adam ki akriv mikem. It's not merely because it affects other people adversely. It's something that detracts from the entire tzuras ha'adam, the entire makeup of a human being. You're not a human being. Human beings don't steal. There's no such thing as consenting adults. In addition, if you want to bring an animal as a sacrifice, then you can't be an animal, because animals don't bring other animals as sacrifices. You first have to be a mensch. You have to be an adam. Adam ki akriv mikem korban. An Adam can bring a sacrifice of an animal, because then you are on a different level. The animal is created to serve you. But if you're basically an animal, animals weren't created to serve each other. How do you have a right to take an animal and bring it as a sacrifice? So if you want to have the right to bring a sacrifice, you first have to be an Adam. In order to be an Adam, you have to have that Tzelem Elokim. So acting in a just way is not only because it's a social justice, how it affects other people. It's intrinsic justice of how it affects you. What kind of morals, what kind of behavior a person has to have to be considered a human being or to be considered a Jew. And that's why we find that mishpatim are not merely social laws. What does it say? It says, Magid Dvar of Yaakov. The Rabban Shalom spoke and gave us his Torah specifically. Chukov u'mishpot of Yisrael. Lo osachem l'chol goy. God didn't do this to every nation. Now what didn't he do to every nation? He didn't give every nation mishpatim? Yes, he did. He told them that they have to set up a social justice system. It's one of the seven mitzvahs of Noah. So it should say, Lo osachem l'chol goy. God didn't do this to every nation. The chukim lo yadol, because he didn't tell him his chukim, his super rational laws. The rational laws the goyim have to, not allowed to steal, and so on. What does it say? Umishpatim bal yadol. God didn't make known to the goyim his mishpatim, his civil rational laws. That's not true. That's, if anything, that's what he did make known to them. The answer is different. By the Goyim, rational civil law has one purpose: to create a functioning society and to avoid anarchy. People can get along with each other. It's the benefit of the social system, of the community, why people have to act in a just way. That's the purpose of it. It's the end that's important. And that makes the means important. By us, there is no line of demarcation between civil rational law and religious super-rational law. In 2 seconds, I'll give you examples. But let me first tell you something that tells Rosh Hashiva said, which is something to remember. Okay, especially to tell over to others who would question this. Some irreligious person once came to the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva and he said, "Rabbi, I don't understand these religious Jews with the beards and the payas who are dishonest in business, lie and cheat." So Rabbi Katz, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, Zecher Tzadik Livrach, said to him, "You know, I have the same problem. I don't understand these Jews with the beards and the payas who drive on Shabbos and eat on Yom Kippur and eat chazer." The guy said, "Wait a second, Rabbi, those aren't religious people." He said, "Neither were the first ones. Why do you consider people who lie and cheat and are dishonest in business religious? Because why? Because they keep the other part of the Torah? Then why wouldn't you consider religious people who don't keep this part of the Torah? Both of them are not religious. Religious does not mean being kosher, keeping Shabbos, fasting on Yom Kippur, but when it comes to this civil mishpatim, right, to totally disregard the Torah, just as much as you can't be religious if you disregard the other part of the Torah. Religious means it's one unit, and there's kimat no distinction between them. There's no compartmentalization. It's not, this is civil, this is religious, and I'll show you. Give you two examples of something that seems to be a religious law, kashrus, and it has implications to interpersonal relationships, and something that seems to be a civil law that has implications to religion, in quotation marks. Our religion is all together. It's not this or that. It's all religion. It's all avodas Hashem. First example. Torah says, "Ubasar basod treifalo sochelu lakelef tashlichinosa." This is the classical treifa. We use treifa colloquially to mean anything that's not kosher. Treif. But it really applies to something specific. An animal that has one of 18 different kinds of diseases that will cause its death within 12 months. But it's 18 specific kinds of things. It's missing an organ. It has a hole in a brain, in a lung, different organs or whatever. There are 18 specific kinds of things that are trefos. The way that an animal usually gets this is because it's mauled by a wild animal. A lion, a wolf, attacks the sheep, digs its claws into it, puts a hole in its brain, hole in its lung, and you don't know about that, until you shecht it. You shecht the animal, and you check the inside, you found it has a hole in its lung, has a hole in its brain. So the animal now is not edible. It's awesome. It's a treifa. That is a treifa. Basar basar the treifa. So what do you do with that meat? You can't eat it. So the Torah tells you what to do with it. Give it to a dog. Question is why? Why do you give it to the dog? So the Medrash says that the dogs did not bark by Makas Bechoros. When God smote the Egyptians, dogs usually bark when there's death, and they didn't bark, and therefore they deserve a reward. Give them the meat. That's a Medrash. The Vilna Gaon, as an aside, this is really not part of this, the Vilna Gaon explains what's a big deal. It says because dogs bark in happiness or in fear at two times. Either when Eliyahu Navi is around and not visible to us, just like there are sounds that are beyond our hearing, but dogs can hear them, supersonic sounds. So dogs can sense spiritual things that we can't sense. So when Eliyahu HaNavi is around, dogs bark out of joy. And when the Malach HaMavis is around, the dogs bark out of fear. Had the dogs barked that night when God killed the Egyptians, it would have implied that the Malach HaMavis is doing the killing and not God himself. In order to make the Kiddush Hashem that it's God and not the Malach HaMavis, the dogs kept quiet. So they deserve a reward. They made a Kiddush Hashem. Even if they didn't do it consciously, but a Kiddush Hashem came through them. So give them the meat of the treif. Okay. the Dazakein of Ibali Atosva says, what's the Poshup shot? What's a simple explanation? Forget about Midrashim. What's a simple explanation? Why do you give this meat to a dog? Says the Dazakein, because every herd usually has a dog, a sheep dog, that guards, protects, guides the herd. And this dog has faithfully served in that capacity for many, many times. And therefore, if you have a sheep from that herd that you can't eat, out of gratitude, give it to the dog. That's what he says. There's only one problem, he says. The only reason this sheep is not edible is because the dog didn't do his job. Because if the dog had done his job in protecting the herd, the animal would not have been mauled. He says, so what? So the dog failed once. But that doesn't erase all the times that the dog did do his job. So just because the dog failed once, don't refrain from giving him the meat that's his fault. Because now you're not going to recognize all the good things he did before. Now think about it. How many people do you know? I hope not personally, or that it applies to you or to me. How many people do you know that had good friends? People were friends for years. And then one of them did something not nice to the other one. And they wrote them off, finished. You don't treat a dog like that. You don't let one bad thing erase all the good that somebody did for years. You don't do that to a dog. How many people do that to human beings? So here is a totally kashrus law, right? It's a religious law, kashrus, treifus. And yet the implications are interpersonal relationships. So the line is not a very definite line. Another case. If you have somebody who breaks into your house at night, sneaks in, and steals your wallet. If they catch him, he has to pay you double what he stole. Kef, it's a ganav. On the other hand, if during the day he comes over and knocks you down and snatches your wallet, he only pays, and you catch him, he has to pay back what he stole. Nothing more. One of the reasons the Gemara gives is, the person who knocked you down and took your wallet in broad daylight doesn't have the capacity of fear. He's not afraid of anything. He's not afraid of you. He's not afraid of God. So he stole. He has to pay back. But the guy who snuck into your house at night is afraid of you. But he's not afraid of God. Somebody who has the capacity to fear human beings and doesn't fear God, it's a much worse thing. Now here we're talking about stealing. We're talking about civil law. What in the world does the guy's Yiras Shamayim have to do with how much he pays? The answer is there's not a line, a distinct line between what we consider religious and what we consider civil. The civil is mixed with the religious is mixed with the civil, and it all becomes religious. It all becomes Avodas Hashem. That's what a Oved Hashem is. Somebody who is careful with his interpersonal relationships and his relationship with God. You can't separate the two. Your relationship with people has implications to your relationship with God. Your relationship to God has implications to your relationship with people. And that's why, one of the ideas of why the Sanhedrin sat next to the Mizbeach. The Sanhedrin that dealt mostly with civil law had to be opposite the Mizbeach, which is the symbol of getting close to God. What do you do on a Mizbeach? You bring korbanos. Okay? And therefore, where was the Mizbeach built? It says that the Mizbeach that Noach built and Adam HaRishon built was from the place where they were created, where Adam HaRishon was created. God took earth from the Makom HaMizbeach and he made man. So that's where we build the Mizbeach. Why? Because the fact that we can bring sacrifices, the fact that we can get close to God, shows the importance of man. This is where man's importance, that earth that God took. Well, how important is that earth? It was taken from the place of the Mizbeach, where man can get close to God. And the closeness to God does not only come from making sacrifices. It comes from civil law just as much. from being a mensch, from being the kind of person that God intended you to be, meaning the kind of person that's extremely intrinsically important and can be. The whole world was created for him. Everything. That's the lesson. And therefore, what is prohibited when it comes to building a mizbeach and using the mizbeach? You can't use metal, iron, to build the mizbeach, because iron represents the shortening of human life, and the mizbeach represents the total value of human life. So it's a conflict. There's a total conflict between using something to build a mizbeach that shortens human life, where the purpose of the mizbeach is to tell you the value of human life. Here is a place where man's ascendancy over the animal is obvious, because he can bring animals to sacrifice. He's not an animal. He can use the animals who were created for him. Here is where man can get closer to God. So therefore you don't build a mizbeach with something that shows the total disregard for human life. Metal, which is used in weapons. And secondly, you don't walk on the mizbeach in a way that uncovers your nakedness. Because the value of a human being is not his external being, his body. That's what immorality is. That's what erva is. Erva is looking at a human being like an animal, totally external, not seeing the inner value, going only after the facade, the externals. That's what tznius is. Tznius is, there's more to me than meets the eye. I cover the externals to represent that the internal is what's the main thing over here. So you don't deal with the mizbeach in an external way, in an immoral external way, but you deal with it with tznius, with modesty, because that points to the inner value of a human being, which goes way beyond his externals, which is basically what he shares with the animal. That is the foundation, therefore, of all mishpatim, that we are God's servants. Avodayim. We can serve God and we can become one with him. An eved is subjugated. And totally an extension of his master. So we being servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so we are extensions, kibiyachol, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have an ability to cleave to him, to attach ourselves to him. Therefore, if a person sells himself as a slave to another human being, it seems to take away his entire importance. Comes along the Torah and says, no, a Jew can never become a slave. You can have an Eved Kanani, who's a slave in perpetuity. A Jew can't be a slave for more than 6 years. Because God says, the Medrash said, when I created the world, I created it in 6 days. 6 days of work, but there's a goal to this world. All that work was only the preparation. The goal of everything was Olam Haba. A human being works in this world. He's involved in the physical world. But it's not for its own sake. It's to create Olam Haba. There's a neshama. The world was created for a person, like we said. There must be eternity. It must be something universal and eternal. Memela, a Jew can sell himself as a slave. It's only external. It can only last for 6 years. Because ultimately, intrinsically, he's my slave and not a human being's slave. And even if he wants to extend it, and he repeats the sin. When 6 years come up, he wants to stay. We pierce his ear. It's only an external thing. Even that blemish is only external. But intrinsically, he's not a slave. Intrinsically, he's going to go out by Yovel. There's just a matter of time until he realizes what his intrinsic value is. He's not a slave to other human beings. Temporarily, he can act like one. Temporarily, he can even be forced to fill out the sentence. But ultimately, it's only an external thing. Otherwise, we should pierce his inner ear. But it's his outer ear that's the problem. It's the externals. It's not what really is intrinsically. That's the idea. Yeah?
Why the ear?
Well, because the ear that heard on Har Sinai, right, what his greatness is, that you're my slaves, not slaves to others. The ear that heard that Jews don't steal, and you went and stole. The ear should be pierced. But don't ever think that it's your inner ear, it's your intrinsic inside that has been blemished. You've only blemished the outside, how you function. But what you really are, you still maintain that greatness. And this week's Sedra is also Shkolim. Machsa Shekel represents this idea too. It says that the Shekel represents the fire. There's a fire, a coin of fire that it represents, which is the Nisham of the person. The Shekel represents, the half Shekel represents the intrinsic value of the Jew. Every Jew has a value to him. Okay, the half shekel is just symbolic, right? It's symbolic of a spiritual force that shekel represents. But my value is only if you understand that you have to be part of a tzibur. You're part of Klal Yisrael. You're not valuable on your own alone. You're valuable because you're a half, and there's another half, and another half, and there's Klal Yisrael. You're part of Klal Yisrael. That gives you importance. And as Klal Yisrael, you're an Eved Lashem. And what comes from those half shekels? Karbanos. That's how you get closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. By recognizing your intrinsic value. Recognizing that intrinsic value has to mesh with other people. Because you're only half. And therefore the social justice system is not only important because it creates a function in society. Because it's a product of your intrinsic self-worth, how a person has to function, how he has to act to represent that value that you have. That's the way you get closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's no difference between the self-value vis-a-vis other people and vis-a-vis God in bringing a sacrifice. It's all one unit. It's all one idea. So that's why this Parsha of Mishpatim finds its place immediately after the giving of the Torah. Because if you don't understand your self-worth, if you don't understand your connection to God, and that it depends on how you connect to other people, then you never can have God's presence consistently and constantly around. He may be there when you're davening. He may be there when it's Shabbos, or when you're doing some kind of religious act. But he won't be there constantly, consistently when you're sitting in your store or you're functioning as a doctor or a lawyer or you're functioning with other people, right, on a everyday basis. So if you want to have the Geula, like the Ramban says, is God's presence devolving on the homes of the Jewish people like it did by the Avos. The Avos were not just religious. They were mentioned. They were Yeshorim. They were straight people, with people and with God. And that's the only way that a person can really be a religious person. And that's the only way you can have that ongoing relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that he's around all the time, not at selective times. So since the Geula depends on that connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam on an ongoing basis, the only way to get that is through the Mishpatim, and then through the Karbanos and the Mishkan. They have to go together. So before you can have the Mishkan and the Karbanos, you need first the Sanhedrin that sits near the Mizbeach and balances the two things out. So all of these parshias find their way in Sefer HaGeula. The Mishpatim both complete the giving of the Torah and show its importance, because we're important, and it shows also that if you want to have that constant relationship with God, you can't make a distinction between civil law and religious law. It's all one thing.